Just before I start, I want to thank one of the most underthanked people in this community, is Daniel Kalish, who, even though he's not here right now because he has a shear, but he's basically the motor behind this whole shear, and he's the one who brought it from a thought to a lemaisa. And I also want to thank Mordechai Stern and John Wogan for being the sadr of the shear, and to encourage anyone that, you know, we're at the very infant stages of a new program in the yeshiva, anybody who wants to be involved or has any suggestions or input should be in touch with them, and we'll see how to take it from here. This is we're still at the infant stages, and changes could still be made, probably will be made. Maybe the menu will change, who knows. Okay, Parshas Achrei Mos. The end of Parshas Achrei Mos is a very famous bunch of psukim because we learn them by Mincha on Yom Kippur, and they're about the Yisurim of Arayas, the Yisurim of which relationships are us, or the Chiyuvei Karas, family and other Yisurei Arayas. But there's a Hakdama to that Parsha, and the Hakdama is the beginning of Perek Yud Ches. The Hakdama is Hashem says like this. Hashem says to Moshe like this. Like the actions of the land of Mitzrayim that you lived in, don't do. And like the actions of the people of Canaan that I'm bringing you there, I'm bringing you to Eretz Yisrael, don't do like their actions either. And don't go in their ways, according to their laws. This whole pasuk seems to be a little bit extra. We know everything that Hashem doesn't want us to do is in the Pesukim. A person shouldn't marry his sister, and he shouldn't marry his mother, and all so on and so forth, and all the down to all the details of what type of Arayas or us or mother are all in the Pesukim. Why is it relevant to us that Mitzrayim did that? Don't do what Mitzrayim did, which is such and such and such and such. Just tell me, don't do such and such and such. Why do we have to point a finger first? We start pointing a finger. When you lived in Mitzrayim, and they did a lot of this and this and this, So don't do that. I'm out of Mitzrayim now. Now I'm going to Eretz Yisrael. Why do we have to bring up the old story, the old place that we used to live? Can I say Eretz? Don't do like Eretz Mitzrayim. That's first of all. And second of all, even if we'll have an explanation of that, but there's something extra in the extra pasuk. The pasuk says, like the actions of Eretz Mitzrayim that you lived in. Yeah, you know, probably every Jew knew that they lived in Mitzrayim. We certainly know that they didn't live in Mitzrayim. You learn the beginning of the Chumash, you know that there was Yetzias Mitzrayim, there were Makkos, we just had Pesach. We know that there's Mitzrayim. Like the actions of Eretz Mitzrayim, where you lived. I know where I lived. You know where I lived, and I know where I lived. Why are you saying this? So the truth is that Rashi has this question. If you read Rashi carefully, you'll see that Rashi has this question. And Rashi says that it's referring to specifically the place in Mitzrayim that they lived. They lived in a part of Mitzrayim that was particularly bad, particularly messed up in the Inyan of Arayas, particularly involved in these types of Yisurim. That's where they lived. So therefore it says, like the actions of Eretz Mitzrayim, where you lived, in other words, pointing out how bad it was where you lived, you shouldn't do. But there's two problems with this pshat. And hopefully, if we get to understand a little bit what's behind this whole pasuk, we'll be able to solve these problems. The first problem is, why did they live in the worst possible place in Mitzrayim? Wouldn't we suggest that they live in the best possible place in Mitzrayim? That's the first problem. Maybe they didn't know. You know, you try to start offering answers, but it's a little bit strange, this idea. And second of all, if you want to tell someone not to do something, you tell them not to do the worst possible thing, or you tell him not to do even the easiest thing, and then he understands, of course, the worst things he shouldn't do. You tell someone, don't hit someone, so obviously he shouldn't kill him. But if you say don't kill him, he's not going to infer from that I shouldn't hit him. So let's assume that the place that they lived was the worst place. But why am I bringing that up now? What's the difference what the worst place is? I should just say, don't do like Mitzrayim. Don't do like the worst places, don't do like the best places, don't be like Mitzrayim. Why do I say don't be like the worst place where you lived? What's the point of that? Because I want to go back a little bit to the Inyanim of Mitzrayim, and then hopefully we'll be able to come back to Parshas Achrei Mos with a clearer understanding. couple of weeks ago, I had the good fortune to start a Chumash Seder with the Baruch Levine. And the first parsha that we started learning Chumash together was Parshas Beshalach. And the first pasuk that we learned together mystified us. We almost gave up on the first pasuk. It was a very mystifying pasuk. It says, Parshas Beshalach is the parsha of Kriyas Yamsuf. That's where the Yamsuf split and the Yidden went through and they said Shira. So we were setting up our Seder. We decided we only have a few minutes every week to learn. And we can't learn the whole parsha in a few minutes. So we decided we'll try to learn the least popular parts of the parsha. Because like the most popular parts everyone gets to every year, you hear a word on this and that. So we took the few psukim after the end of the Shira. That, you know, a lot of people don't even know that they exist, these psukim. And we decided we'll learn those psukim to familiarize ourselves with the lesser known psukim in the parsha. And it's been exciting. So right after Kriyas Yamsuf is over, it says, Vayasa Moshe es Yisrael mi Yamsuf. And Moshe, literally it means, and Moshe traveled the nation from Yamsuf. He kind of pushed them out. He made them travel. Vayasa is to make travel. And Nesiyah is a trip. Vayasa is to make someone travel. Next person is Masiyah, his family. He makes his family travel. So Rashi's bothered. Wasn't Moshe have to push them? He should say, let's go. What does it mean he made them travel? So Rashi says, and this was incredible. Rashi says that Moshe actually had to force them to leave Mitzrayim. And the reason he had to force them is because when the Mitzrayim chased after the Yidden, they adorned their horses with gold and silver ornaments. So we had a bunch of horses, rich horses, full of jewelry and gold and silver and precious stones. And after all the Mitzrayim were killed in Kriyas Yamsuf and the water fell on them and their bodies washed up on the shore, you had all these dead horses full of gold and silver. So the Jews were pulling the gold and silver off the horses. So Moshe had to say, guys, all right, enough, let's go. Enough with the horses. That's what Rashi says. It's disappointing to say the least, this Rashi. You can just imagine what's going on over here. You have a nation that the day before, they saw a vision that all the prophets of later years have never seen such a great vision. That they were able to point with their finger and say, Zeh Keli Vaveu, this is my Hashem. That's what they saw. They were exposed to such spirituality that it's just like, it's not possible for us to comprehend what they were exposed to. They sang Shira. They themselves all became prophets and they prophesied about Achris HaYamim, about Mashiach, about Chiyas HaMesim. You're talking about people that were exposed to the greatest heights of spirituality. And we all know that, you know, life has its ups and downs. But when you're exposed to tremendous exposure to spirituality, the next day you're not pulling gold and silver off a dead carcass. It should have some effect the day later. So imagine that Moshe Rabbeinu had to pull them away from a bunch of dead horses the day after they said Zeh Keli Vaveu. It doesn't make sense. While we're on the topic of gold and silver, I have another question about gold and silver. It says in Parshas Bo, Hashem said to Moshe, please speak to the nation. Daber no be'oznei ha'am. While they were still in Mitzrayim, please speak to the nation, and they should borrow from the Egyptians gold and silver. And then the pasuk says that they did that, and they went out very, very wealthy from Mitzrayim. It's a little bit interesting that they borrowed it. Why didn't they just take it? You know, this parasha needs a little bit of beer, but we're not going to get into the whole thing. I just want to pull one at least to resolve one of the problems, the complexities in this issue. Hashem tells Moshe, please speak to the nation. The question is obvious. Why does he have to beg them? If they want the gold and silver, they'll take the gold and silver. If they don't want it, they don't have to have it. Why please speak? What if the nation decides they're busy with other things? They don't want the gold and silver, so who cares? Why does Hashem say, Daber no, Ei no ela Lashem Bakasha, please speak to the nation? So Rashi has this question. Many times, it's good to know, many times when you read a Rashi, he doesn't say what his question is. But if you read the Rashi very, very carefully, you realize what he's addressing, and this is definitely what he's addressing. And Rashi says that hundreds of years before, when Hashem told Avraham Avinu that there's going to be a Golos Mitzrayim, and the Yidden are going to be in Mitzrayim, and that they're going to suffer in Mitzrayim, and that eventually the Egyptians will be punished, and eventually they'll leave Mitzrayim, Hashem told Avraham that they're going to leave with tremendous riches. They're going to leave tremendously wealthy. So Hashem was telling Moshe, please tell them, because if they don't take the gold and silver, Avraham Avinu is going to come to me, and he's going to say, you promised that they're going to leave with wealth, and they're not leaving with wealth. And I'm not going to be able to keep my promise to Avraham Avinu. This Rashi bothered me for years. For years. This is what Avraham Avinu is in Shemayim about. This is what he's busy with? That the Jews should be rich? It sounds almost petty. Like, doesn't he know by now, after spending hundreds of years in Shemayim, after having lived his whole life in this world, doesn't he know by now what Shlomo HaMelech taught us, that everything in this world is nothingness, is not important? Is wealth, is riches really so important that the father of our nation would come in front of the Kisei HaKavod and say, my kids are not rich enough? It bothered me. The crust kite of it bothered me. It's like, what kind of, that's what Avraham Avinu is busy with? Is that the tzura that we have of a tzaddik, that the tzaddik concerns himself to make sure that his family be wealthy? Is that what we imagine the Chafetz Chaim, let's say, or the Chazon Ish and so on, that they would busy themselves making sure, before they leave the world, they want to make sure their family is wealthy. It's not, they try to make sure their family will stay from, they try to make sure that they'll follow the right path, that they'll be close to each other. There's all kinds of things that would concern a person about his descendants, but that they be wealthy is not one of them. Maybe in outside in the world you'll find that, but not by tzaddikim. The pshat is like this, there's a depth over here that the Sfarim explain. But Tzadik says it, but others say it also. And the depth is like this. There's 70 nations in the world. And many of them have been hosts to Klal Yisrael over the years, through the travels of Golos. Klal Yisrael has found themselves to be the guests of many of these, sometimes honored guests and sometimes not so honored, but the guests of many of these nations. Every single nation has its weaknesses and has its strengths, has its good midas and has its weak midas. And usually they use it, it's self-serving. Usually they use whatever creativity or uniqueness they have, they use it to serve themselves. So a certain nation is very, industrious, a certain nation is very creative, a certain nation is very poetic, a certain nation is very brotherly, all the different midas that exist, and they use it, it's usually self-serving, they have these midas. Is the Gemara in Pesachim, the Gemara says, an unbelievable Gemara in its own right, but the Gemara says, like Galu Yisrael, Yidden were only sent into exile, Ela sheyitaisu aleihem geirim, so that the geirim should join them. But as Yidden will travel through the nations, and people will be inspired by the Jews, they'll join the Jewish nation. That's what the Gemara says. So the Mefarshim explained that it doesn't just mean human beings who are geirim. That's not the only kavanah. That's also the kavanah, but that's not the only kavanah. What is a geir? A geir is someone who comes from the outside and becomes part of Klal Yisrael. So the Sfarim say, like as Reb Tzadik says it and others say it, the job of Klal Yisrael, traveling through the different nations, is to learn and to take the good things that the nations have to offer. To use what's unique, and I'm going to give some examples in a few minutes. To use what's unique and to use the midas of each nation, and to, instead of using it in a self-serving way, to transform it into kelim to serve Hashem. To transform it into ways to serve Hashem. Just like the ger comes from the outside and then he becomes a vessel to serve Hashem, so to any midah that exists in the outside world, Klal Yisrael takes that midah and uses it and transforms it to serve Hashem. I'll give an example now. It's an example. It's a very, very serious question that I heard a few years ago, and it's very, very important in this idea. It says in the Mishnah in Shkalim, that there were three boxes in the Beis HaMikdash. And those three boxes, when Klal Yisrael would give the Maktis HaShekel every year before Purim, Rosh Chodesh Adar, every year would give a half shekel, they would fill these three boxes with the half shekels. So they were labeled 1, 2, and 3. But the Mishnah says they weren't labeled 1, 2, and 3, they were labeled Alpha, Beta, Gamla, which are Greek numbers, 1, 2, and 3, A, B, and C. And it's a little bit strange to imagine that the Greek letters adorn the boxes in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Mefarshim say, I think it's a Yerushalmi, but I'm not sure, but the Mefarshim on the Mishnah, in the Mishnayot, the Rabbah, the Taisi Jantar, they bring that it's in keeping with the pasuk that says in the beginning of Parshas Noach, it says Yafta Lekim LeYefes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will broaden the share of Yefes. Yefes is the father of Greece. VeYishkein Ba'al LeShem, and it will dwell in the tents of Shem. We're the tents of Shem. So in other words, there are things about Greece, the things about the Goyish world, that will dwell in our tents. So that makes it sound like it's a good thing. It's a good thing that there's Alpha, Beta, Gamla in the Beis HaMikdash. In addition, there's a Gemara and Megillah that says, at least according to one man, the Omar, that the only language you could translate Torah into is Greek. Because Greek is a beautiful language. So it's worthy of having the Torah translated into that language. The problem is that the Gemara also says that the day that the king in Greece said that they should translate the Torah into Greek was a sad day for Klal Yisrael, and the Lashon of Chazal is that darkness descended onto the world. And one second. Is it a good thing or is it a bad thing for the Torah to be in Greek? Is it a good thing? I see that in the Beis HaMikdash it was Greek. I see that the Gemara says that I could translate into Greek, so it sounds like it's a good thing. Or is it a bad thing? It says the day that the Torah was translated into Greek, darkness descended on the world. So the Mefarshim say as follows. They say that it depends what's serving what. Greek is a beautiful language, and it had maybe a wider audience than Lashon Kodesh at the time. So to the extent that we're using Greek to beautify the Torah, or to spread the message of the Torah in the world, to that extent it's a great thing. That we're using the nation that we, in that time that we were in Galus Yavon, we're using the nation that we were exiled to, and we're taking from that nation what's beautiful. They have a beautiful language. It's brought all over Shas, the Greek is a beautiful language. And we're using that to also adorn our Torah. That's beautiful. But if we use Greek to translate the Torah into Greek so that Goyim could abuse the Torah, so that it could become less special, there are many other ideas that the king, you know, that the kings of Goyim can have in mind when they want the Torah translated, as we found, unfortunately, through the generations. When it's used, when the Greek is not used to beautify the Torah, but the Torah is being used to entertain the Greek, so then that's the opposite. Then it's abusing being in Golos. Then it's an abuse of Golos. So we find it's just an example where what being in Golos Yavon could serve to further the message of Torah by using that beautiful thing that they have. So similarly, when the Yidden are in Mitzrayim or in any other nation, their job is to look into Mitzrayim, see what their Midah is, and instead of using it in their crooked way or in their self-serving way, to transform that into a Midah that helps them connect with Hashem. That's what it means. That's the depth of the message. They're going to leave with wealth. The physical wealth is just a mushal, a parable. It's just that they help us grasp what's going on over here. The real wealth that Klal Yisrael has when they leave a nation, and they have a geula from a nation, or that we're going to have v'acharas hayom, is that we manage to take with us the life, the what's toy, what's special about every nation, and to take it with us. Our nafsa keeps getting bigger. As we travel through the nations, we keep adding more and more Dvarim Tovim that Hashem sprinkled through the nations. Now let's just for a moment to realize how incredibly meductic it is. What was the Midah of Mitzrayim? You see in Parshas Atnos, what was their Midah? Znus. Mitzrayim was very, very involved in the Psukim say, Ezer Masusim, Zer Masam. Chazal say it, they were Shtufei Zima. They were very involved in inappropriate relationships. That was the Midah of Mitzrayim. We see right away, Avram went to Mitzrayim, they grabbed Sarah, they're checking out his suitcases to see if he has a wife in there. The Midah of Mitzrayim, what we find consistently throughout Chumash, is that Mitzrayim were Shtufei Zima. What's the Midah of Znus? So the Svarim tell us that the Midah of Znus is a twisted form of love and kindness. It's twisted love and kindness. Love and kindness used positively fosters positive relationships, fosters harmony between a man and his wife, fosters love between a parent and their children, and so on. Twisted love, used improperly, creates relationships where there shouldn't be relationships, and uses kalim that were supposed to be used to create positive relationships, and uses them to create negative relationships. That's so Arayas is the kilkul of the Midas HaChesed. And that's why Yishmael is Avram's son. Yishmael, who throughout the Torah we find also that Yishmael stands for Gilui Arayas. Maybe we'll talk about it another time, the Arayas to it. is the son of Avram. He's like the bad side that fell away from Avram. Avram Avinu is the pillar of Chesed. As everybody knows, you read even the simple reading of the Pesukim. Avram Avinu is the pillar of Chesed. He's the one who had his Mila, and 3 days later he's sitting outside and he's waiting for guests. He's the one who sets up a tent in the desert and he's feeding people and teaching them about Hashem. Avram Avinu is the pillar of love and kindness. The Midah of Ava, the Midah of Chesed is Avram. The Psalas, the shaft that falls off is Yishmael. So who comes to Hashem and says, where's the Rechush Gadol? Avram Avinu. Because the Rechush of Mitzrayim, what's the treasure of Mitzrayim? It's love and kindness. That's the treasure of Mitzrayim, which they perverted into Znus. But if you strip it down to its bare, to the Midah, it's love and kindness. Whose Midah is love and kindness? The Midah of Avram. So that's why it's Avram that comes in front of Hashem. Hashem is afraid that Avram will come to him and say, what happened to the Rechush Gadol? Where's the Rechush Gadol? Where's the love and the kindness that I want them to learn from Mitzrayim, which is my Midah? Where is that? That's the pshat in the Avram Avinu wasn't interested in the gold and silver. He was interested in what the gold and silver represent. They represent taking the wealth of Mitzrayim. What's the real wealth of a nation? The real wealth of a nation is their good midas, is their creativity and uniqueness. That's the real wealth of a nation. And Hashem said, if they don't take the gold and silver, which again it was physical gold and silver, but it represented a certain concept of learning from Mitzrayim and gaining spiritual advancement and growth from Mitzrayim, if they won't do that, Avraham Avinu is going to say, Avraham Avinu, who himself is the pillar of Chesed, is going to say, 1 second, I want them to learn Chesed. I want them to learn about love. I want them to learn about kindness. Okay, so now we could understand the rest of the questions, solve themselves almost. Chazal tell us that what the Yidins took from the Yamsuf, the riches that they took from the Yamsuf, was greater than the riches that they took out of Mitzrayim. Gedol Avizas Hayam Avizas Mitzrayim. Now, if we understand that the riches that they took out of Mitzrayim wasn't just physical riches, that's almost unimportant, but it was the unique bailus of Mitzrayim that they were taking. And whatever ruchniyistik advancement and aliyah they were able to attain by being in Mitzrayim. So the Chazal are telling us that being on the Yamsuf and seeing the destruction of Mitzrayim and being chased by Mitzrayim somehow caused Klal Yisrael to be able to grow and to be able to gain from that story, from that event that occurred, even more than they gained from leaving Mitzrayim. Seeing a nation destroyed because they abused a certain midah, there's no greater lesson about how you're supposed to use the midah correctly. Seeing a nation destroyed, decimated, what they do wrong. It's a tremendously powerful lesson. But that's what it means when it says that Moshe Rabbeinu had a hard time getting Klal Yisrael to move because they were pulling the gold and silver off the horses. It doesn't mean that all they cared about was money and they were pulling gold and silver off the horses. Again, the physical act of taking money to them represented and was a way of acting out a much, much deeper thing that they were learning from the event that happened. They didn't want to leave this holy place where such an amazing revelation occurred. They didn't want to leave. They felt like they had so much more to learn here. Moshe Rabbeinu had to say, guys, I'm sorry. It's time to move on. There are other things to accomplish ahead. And they just, you know, sometimes when a person has such a wonderful event in his life, or something wonderful, you don't want to go back into regular life again. You want to stick around and enjoy the glow of it. Sometimes people say, okay, sorry, it's time to move on. Life goes on. That was the vayah, that was the push. Doesn't mean the day after they saw Hashem, they're pulling gold and silver off horses. Doesn't mean that. It means the day after they saw Hashem, they're recognizing how much they have to gain from being here. And that Moshe Rabbeinu had to tell them, I'm sorry. Reb Tzadik basically says this in one of his pieces on Parashat Shkolim. That's true, we understand why Klal Yisrael lived in the worst possible place. The worst possible place means the place that the Midah existed in its full strength. The place where they weren't so involved in Znus, that means that their Midah only existed a little bit. They were a little bit involved in their national Midah. But the place that was the worst, that means that they had the greatest strength in that Midah. That was the place for Klal Yisrael to live, and to learn the greatest strength of the Midah, but to understand how to turn it back to the way it was created, that it should be served to create love between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and love between man and his friend, and love between man and his wife, and his family, and all the things that Av and Chesed are supposed to be used for. Okay, so then we look back at Parshas Achrei Mos, Psukim are beautiful, very important and beautiful. We were supposed to learn from Mitzrayim. We're supposed to gain from Mitzrayim. We're supposed to learn about love. We're supposed to learn about chesed. I might get confused, and I might sometimes feel like I should learn from Mitzrayim in a way that's not 100% positive. After all, the reason I was there was to learn from them. There the Pasuk Council says. Like the actions of Eretz Mitzrayim, where you lived, and you lived there, and you were supposed to, the fact that you lived there indicates that you had what to learn there. But don't do those actions. Don't go in their path. Take the midah and use it positive. Don't use the midah negative. That's why it spells it out. It's spelling it out because there is a hava mina here. Because we are supposed to learn from the nations that we spend time in. When we exist and we're in Golis in a nation, we're supposed to gain. We're supposed to get those gayer. But make sure it's positive. Make sure it's not crooked. Make sure it's in the correct way. Like the actions of Mitzrayim, don't do like their actions. Take the midah and use it for proper relationships. Use it for proper love and kindness. Don't twist it like Mitzrayim did. That's what the Pasuk is saying. K'maisei Eretz Mitzrayim asher yishavtem bo lo yisa'asu. That's what I think the Pshat of the Pasuk is offering us.